Thanks, everyone, for joining here. I'm honored to have the CEO, Subodh, from Rigetti Computing. So I'd love if you could just kind of start with a quick introduction of yourself and maybe kind of background of the company.
Sure. Thanks for having us, Troy.
Of course. Yep.
So I'm the CEO for Rigetti Computing. I've been with the company for a little more than 2 years now. Before that, my background, basically engineering by training. I did my PhD at MIT in semiconductors, then worked in semi-industry for many years, almost 3 decades now. Last 10 years, I was a CEO of a publicly traded company in the Twin Cities called CyberOptics. We were doing inspection and metrology for semi-industry and electronics manufacturing. That company got bought out about 2.5 years ago, and then I took this job at Rigetti. Quick background about Rigetti. Rigetti was founded in 2013 by Dr. Chad Rigetti, and that's where the name comes from. And we are a full-stack quantum computing development company. That means we do everything from designing the chip to building the chip. We have a fab in Fremont, California. Our head office is in Berkeley, California. And we do the entire stack, the hardware and the software. That's how we started. Right now, we are in our 11th year, a lot of IP around this area, obviously. We have about 230 patents. We are what we call superconducting gate-based quantum computing development company. I'm sure we'll get into that.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. So in fact, that's my next question. If you can discuss the differences between supercomputing or superconducting, trapped ions, photonics, can you talk about the strengths and weaknesses of both?
So sure. So before we dive into the details, let's a couple of minutes about quantum computing.
Yeah, please. Yes, absolutely.
So quantum computing is an exciting area right now with significant potential long term. And fundamentally, that's because instead of getting constrained by zeros and ones with the classical digital technology we all use, which is CMOS basically, we can have multiple states at the same time. And also, we can entangle this, what we call qubits, at the same time. So when you have n bits with your classical digital technology, your computational power goes linearly by 2 multiplied by n, and your energy consumption also goes linearly 2 multiplied by n. When you have n qubits, in quantum we call them qubits, your computational power goes 2 raised to n, and your energy consumption also gets equally reduced. So when n is small, it doesn't make a big difference. But when n becomes 50 or 100, 2 multiplied by 100 is 200, 2 raised to 100 is practically infinity. That's where the power of quantum computing starts. When you have many qubits and you entangle them, you get this tremendous computing power. I mean, we are not talking 2x or 4x better than classical computing. We are talking a million or billion times faster than classical computing, taking on problems that you cannot even fathom right now, like protein unfolding problem or weather forecasting type problems, where there are millions of variables all interacting simultaneously. So phenomenal potential to solve problems that cannot be solved with classical computing today, and also consume a lot less energy, because a 100-qubit chip is practically the power of a supercomputer, which would be the size of this room, if not multiplied by two. We are consuming a lot less energy than a classical supercomputer or an HPC stack. So it's both higher computing power as well as lower energy consumption. That's what the excitement is about. Obviously, one of the reasons governments and everyone's getting involved is because of its capability to encrypt and decrypt. Now, what it means is right now, all of us are using AES encryption, 128-bit, 256-bit. That's how the world is running right now. And it works because even with a supercomputer, it would take you 1,000 years to break a single encryption key. With quantum computers, once you have capable quantum computers, you can break a 128 or even 256-bit encryption key in a few seconds.
That's crazy.
So unfortunately, that means the negative use for quantum computing may happen before the positive use cases, because a rogue company or country, if they manage to get a quantum computer, I mean, we can laugh about it, but the stakes are pretty high, right?
Right.
I mean, if somebody got hold of a capable quantum computer, it would make the current missile-based warfare look like medieval affairs. I mean, you can literally bring a whole country to its knees by shutting down everything. So, which also means that to prevent that from happening, you need to encrypt information with quantum computing, right? So there's both cases. So anyway, it's exciting. A lot of effort is going on right now to advance quantum computing. Now, within quantum computing, and that gets to your question, there are many ways we can do quantum computing. Fundamentally, quantum computing is we are getting state of the matter in quantum state, and we are doing the computation while it is in quantum state. there are many different ways of bringing things in the quantum state and doing computation with that. Broadly, there are what we call gate-based quantum computing and non-gate-based approaches. Gate-based is very similar to what we do right now with our conventional technologies. We have 0, 1, and we have gates in between that opens the gates. Quantum computing works the same way. When we do gate-based, we have different states between 0 and 1, but we can transfer the information from one side to the other side exactly the same way as we do today. And most of us, including Rigetti, we are in the gate-based camp. But there are a few non-gate approaches, like entropy-based approach or annealing-based approach. There's a company called D-Wave that is doing annealing. There's a company called Quantum Computing Inc., which is doing entropy-based approach, a little different than what we traditionally do in the gate-based. But most of the rest of us are doing what we call gate-based approaches. Within gate-based approaches, there are different modalities of quantum computing. We do what is called a superconducting quantum computing, mm-hmm. where we are taking basically a chip, taking it in at extremely cold temperatures where we are getting superconducting effects, and that's when we create the quantum effect and doing the computation. In the superconducting camp, you have us, you have big companies like IBM, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, the government of China, the Chinese Academy of Sciences, and many other smaller companies too. Yeah, IQM, Finnish company, Dutch company called Quantware. In Japan, you have Fujitsu, Toshiba. So a lot of effort, a lot of big tech and small companies in the superconducting gate-based quantum computing. There are other modalities. Trapped Ion is one of them, where there's a company in Maryland called IonQ. Mm-hmm. There's a company, private company in Colorado called Quantinium, and a few other companies like that in UK, Oxford Ionics. There's photonics, where you are using laser-based approaches to create quantum effects. There's spin approaches, where you have companies like Intel, Global Foundries are doing some work in that area. And there are a few other modalities. Frankly, there are pros and cons for each modality. There's no clear reason why one modality is significantly better than another. We like superconducting along with many big tech companies, primarily for two reasons. We have the benefit of what we call scalability and gate speeds. By scalability, what we mean is we are essentially using a chip. So once we perfect the chip, we can leverage 5 decades of semiconductor industry experience, and we know how to shrink it, we know how to multiply it, using all the technologies that have been mastered by semiconductor industry. So we all feel confident about the scaling part of quantum computing using superconducting approaches because we are using chip technology. But also gate speed. We are reliant on electron speeds, essentially, exactly like our CMOS technology is. So our gate speeds, or clock speeds, if you will, are in the tens of nanoseconds range. Our downside, the con for superconducting gate approach, is what we call fidelity. Because we are dealing with engineered devices, just like CMOS chips, typically we get noise when we are there's always a noise component, and that leads to decoherence effect, and we lose the quantum effect after tens of microseconds. And ideally, we want it to be as long as possible. So that's been all the challenge for superconducting gate-based quantum computing approaches, the fidelity. On the flip side, trapped ion, pure atom, those kinds of modalities, because they are dealing with pure ions or pure atoms, their fidelity is intrinsically better, but they suffer with scalability. It's not easy for them to go up to hundreds and thousands of qubits, and certainly hundreds of thousands of qubits, but also gate speed. Because they are dealing with ions and atoms, they are significantly bulkier than electrons. So their gate speeds are like 10,000 times slower than where we are, making it impractical to do real-life computing kind of stuff. So there are pros and cons, and every modality has its slightly different challenges. Overall, if you look at where the money is coming in right now from an investment standpoint, just look at all the names that I mentioned, IBM, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, government of China. We are pretty sure the superconducting gate-based modality is probably one of the most likeliest to win, just because of the amount of R&D right. that's going in, effort going in, the benefits of scalability and gate speed. Until about a year ago, or 2 years ago, fidelity was a challenge. But if you look at what one of the reasons the area is getting a lot of excitement right now is with all the announcements that have been happening in the last few months. We announced some pretty impressive results, but Google Willow chip made a big splash when Google announced in early December. Those were really good results. And then IBM had some very important announcements. Very recently, about a month ago, both Amazon and Microsoft made some announcements. So essentially, when you look at all the announcements from various companies in the superconducting camp, including us, essentially what we are saying is we have caught up in fidelity compared to the other modalities, and if anything, we have gone ahead of them. So the traditional advantages of scalability and gate speed still continue, but we have gone ahead in fidelity. So specifically, Google announced 99.7% fidelity, we announced 99.5% fidelity, and frankly, those are equal to, if not better, than the other modalities like trapped ion and pure atoms. So that's what's getting a lot of enthusiasm generated right now in the field.
Interesting. Can you talk a little bit more just about qubits, logical qubits, and just kind of your scalability roadmap?
Sure. So right now, Rigetti, we have deployed our systems on the cloud, on AWS Braket, as well as Microsoft Azure. And our state-of-the-art system is 84-qubit system. Our fidelity is 99.5%. As I mentioned, that's the median 2-qubit gate fidelity, which is when the two qubits are interacting. Single-qubit gate fidelity is no problem. We are all at 99.9%, capable companies. So it's a 2-qubit gate fidelity that we monitor most closely. That's at 99.5. Our gate speeds are in the 70-nanosecond range. That's where we are today. And if you look at IBM and Google's numbers, they're kind of comparable regime right now. All of us are in the same general ballpark. Where we go from here, what we have announced is before the end of 2025, we want to bump up to 100 plus qubits. But importantly, what we have announced is we want to do what we call the chiplet approach this year. And that means we want to tile smaller chips together to build a more than 100-qubit quantum computer. The reason we are doing that, right now all of us, IBM, Google, other companies too, and even the government of China, we are all doing a monolithic chip approach, which is a single chip right now. And that works, obviously. The challenge we see is that as we think about getting to thousands of qubits, we see a potential big problem ahead in the roadmap. We will not be able to control the uniformity correctly enough across the entire surface of the chip area. Same reason why CMOS right now uses chiplets for the advanced technologies. If you take most of the CMOS applications at 3-nanometer and 5-nanometer, the state-of-the-art GPU technology, your state-of-the-art iPhone, if you will, they are all using chiplets, or most of them are using chiplets for the same reasons. When TSMC or Samsung, those kinds of companies are trying to build large chips, monolithic chips, there's challenges with uniformity. And when you're trying to control 3-nanometer type dimensions across the length of centimeters, it becomes extremely difficult. And that's what we are also finding in the quantum world. So the same reasons why CMOS is deploying chiplets is why we are also planning on deploying chiplets. We proved it that you can keep the quantum effects intact while you do chiplets, but we want to prove it in scale right now. So this year our plan is to get to more than 100 qubits with chiplets at 99.7% type fidelity with specific type of gates, or 99.5% fidelity with generic gates, and get the gate speeds below 50 nanoseconds. That's what our plan for this year is. Going forward, we'll continue to bump up both the qubit count as well as the fidelity number. So the goal is to try to get to a few hundred to maybe like 1,000 qubit, more than 1,000 qubit in the next 4 to 5 years, more than 99.8%, closer to 99.9% fidelity, median 2-qubit gate fidelity in the same time period, gate speeds of less than 30 nanoseconds or even 20 nanoseconds, and start doing what we call real-time error correction. Right now, Google Willow was a phenomenal demonstration of error correction, but it was not a real-time error correction. They couldn't keep up with the speed of computing, so it was almost done offline, if you will. And that works, but it's not practical from a compute standpoint. So all of us, I'm sure, we want to get to real-time error correction, that the error correction is happening as we are computing. So the goal is to get to that point in the roughly next 4 years or so, at least 5 years. And that becomes a very important point for the whole industry. We call it quantum advantage. That's when we can demonstrate that quantum computers are superior compared to classical computers in terms of performance or cost. Right now, none of us, okay, are superior than classical computers. And that's why you don't find quantum computers in data centers today. All of our applications are research applications.
Right.
You asked a very important question, a logical qubit. So all the numbers I mentioned, 100 qubit, 1,000 qubits, those are all physical qubits. Right now, I mean, because the errors, 99.5% sounds impressive, But frankly, when you multiply 0.995 a thousand times, you get a very small number. And that's what's going on in real computing. So pretty much, that's not a good enough fidelity.
Right.
At 95, it was really awful. Okay, 99.5, you start getting real meaningful number. Your CMOS technology, by the way, right now, is usually between 4 nines and 6 nines. What that means is it's 99.99 or 99.99999.
Yep.
And the rest of it, we take, we address it with error correction or with redundancy. That's how your current computers work. So we want to get to the same point. We want to get to this 99, at least 3 nines, and start doing error correction, real-time error correction, and we are pretty confident we'll get there. That's when the discussion about logical qubits matter. If you ask me what is our number of logical qubits on our current 100-qubit system, I would say it's pathetically low, okay? So it's not even worth discussing right now how many logical qubits we have with a physical 100-qubit system. And by the way, that's the same for everyone. So if somebody's telling you that they have tens of logical qubits, they are either doing something wrong or they're
lying.
Just flat out lying. So none of us are talking logical qubits because we are not quite there yet.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now when we get to, let's say 4 years or 5 years from now, we are at 1,000 qubit at 99.9, we will be talking roughly 50 to 100 logical qubits at that time. And that becomes important because if you look at the state-of-the-art supercomputer today, it's the Frontier supercomputer that sits in Oak Ridge National Lab. That's the world's biggest supercomputer today. That would be equivalent of 50 logical qubits. Okay, so the power of Frontier is 2 raised to 50, roughly. So that would mean that if we got 50 logical qubits, we could rival the state-of-the-art supercomputer today. And that's why we want to get to the thousands and tens of
right.
thousands of qubits, so we can get to, once you are like at 1,000 qubits or logical qubits, then you have unleashed the real power of quantum computing. That's where we want to go.
Yeah, okay. All right, so to me, there's like so much that needs to be done yet to get to quantum, right? I think about the software, the memory, the storage, the security, right, compilers. Can you just kind of talk about where we are on that aspect of quantum? And then also you mentioned that you guys are doing some software, so expand on that if you could.
So overall, we are still very much in the R&D phase of quantum computing. Okay, we still have to perfect quantum computers before we can take on real-life applications. Most of the work, we have built systems, we have delivered it to customers. If you go to the US government, DOE labs, you will find our quantum computers. You go to DOD labs, you will find our quantum computers. Same with the UK government. So they're working. The good part is they're working. People are doing research work on it. So all that is good. But we cannot demonstrate superiority over classical computing today. So we are very much in the research phase. Now, a lot of companies are focusing on the various different aspects. We are a full stack company, but we are a small company. We are a startup company. So our focus is increasingly becoming more and more on the chip design and chip fabrication. And what we have taken pride in is that we have designed an open modular interface approach. So we can essentially incorporate third party innovative solutions very relatively easily in our stack. IBM and Google have opted to stay with a monolithic mainframe kind of an approach, which works. I mean, they are companies with deep pockets and they can afford to do that. But frankly, we think our open modular approach is a better approach, more creative approach in the long term. And good examples of that is, there's a company in UK called Riverlane in Cambridge, UK. They about the same size as us. They do excellent error correction software. So when we saw their correction is really top notch, we started integrating their software in our stack, and that we could do that because of our open modular approach. Same with NVIDIA. So when NVIDIA started working on the quantum version of CUDA, we could relatively easily integrate NVIDIA CUDA Q in our stack, whereas IBM and Google, they could do it if they wanted to, but they have chosen to stay completely vertical right now. So we think that's the right way to allow others to develop creative solutions with different parts of the stack. Very recently, just last week, we announced a partnership, strategic partnership with a Taiwanese company called Quanta Computer.
Yep, I was gonna ask you that, so please.
And they are the world's number one manufacturer of CPU, GPU servers right now. They're NVIDIA's closest partner. And we believe that their technology marries very well with our technology, so they can start working on control systems, because control system essentially is CPU, GPU server with some RF circuitry in it. So instead of trying to do everything ourselves, we are slowly but surely incorporating creative solutions from outside that accelerates our time to market, allows us to go faster. Applications is the biggest one. And that's where we are really going to be counting on more customers. So we are going to enable more and more applications. We are doing a few applications work ourselves. So we work with customers like Moody's and HSBC and ADIA in Abu Dhabi and a few other customers like that. But frankly, I mean, how many software engineers can you invest in to keep coming up with applications, particularly when you are in the R&D stage? So we are going to be dependent more on customers driving those applications. So our job is to make sure the hardware is ready. We demonstrate what you can do with the hardware, the few applications, and then allow customers to implement those applications. There were some questions.
Oh, go ahead, Justin, please.
Yeah, so AWS, I mean, the rates are well publicized on their website. So if you just go to AWS bracket, you will see Rigetti Computing right at the top over there. And it's like, you know, the first few minutes or hours are free. And then after that, it's per time, second or minute, depending on how much you want to buy. It's relatively cheap. I mean, you don't need that much time to do your problem set.
Right, if you can crack encryption in a matter of seconds, you don't need much time.
we are still far away from that. Okay.
Right.
So that's all public domain info. You can see it very easily. Regarding the use cases, I mean, we can see the number of customers who are accessing our quantum computer through Braket, for instance. We don't see what exactly they are doing. And that's the right thing. We should not be seeing what they're exactly doing. We can see the workload that is being put on our quantum computer, what we call the depth of the circuit that they are deploying, how many qubits they are using. So we can see that there are roughly about 1,000 customers that are accessing it through AWS Braket. We see how much time they are taking, and it's not taking that much. I mean, right now we are basically incorporating all of AWS and Azure customers on one quantum computer, and that's more than enough for that right now. Most of them seem to be for research applications, so it seems like that's what AWS tells us. It's mostly academic institutions, government, national labs, some Fortune large companies, 500 companies, but it's mostly the cutting edge, like the Johnson & Johnson's trying to see what it does for pharmaceutical modeling, those kinds of leading edge kind of customers. So it's very much in the research domain right now.
Yeah, fair. Any other questions from the audience? Also probably hedge funds, right, trying to crack codes and get better performance. But can you expand a little bit on Quanta? I mean, how do they pick you guys? And I think there's an investment related to it, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, as I mentioned, Quanta is a large company. They are almost $43 billion sales last year, growing very rapidly, along with NVIDIA, because they are NVIDIA's closest partner in the GPU ecosystem. Not too many people in the U.S. know about Quanta Computer because they are located in Taiwan, and they're a classic ODM-type company. So they have been looking at, I mean, they have always taken pride in the next thing, what's the next big thing. So when they were one of the first ones to jump into cloud-based CPU and GPU servers 15 years ago, and that's why they are in the position they are in today with NVIDIA and other customer partners. So when they concluded a couple years ago that quantum computing is the next big thing after GPU, that's likely to happen in the next 5 to 10 years. And so they have been scouting the landscape for what companies are most likely going to succeed, what technologies, and so on. And they concluded that superconducting gate-based computing is the most likely one to win for all the reasons I mentioned earlier, scalability, gate speed, and now that the fidelity gap is closed. And then within superconducting, they narrowed it to us because of our open modular format that jives in with their philosophy of things have to be open modular compared to the closed-end approaches that some other companies are doing. And from our side, we knew that longer term, as volumes pick up and applications grow, we needed contract manufacturers. We cannot, right now we are putting everything together in Berkeley, California, not exactly the cheapest manufacturing cost place in the world. So we knew that we had to find the right partners as volumes grow. And Taiwan is a logical place. I mean, most of the CPU, GPU chips are coming from Taiwan right now, as we all know. And it makes sense to partner with a Quanta computer-like company. So the transaction is a little more complex. So what right now, at the end of last year, Rigetti, we finished the year with about $217 million cash and no debt. Quanta Computers is committing to investing $250 million on the non-QPU portion of the stack. The QPU portion is what we will keep intact, QPU being quantum processing unit. So we'll focus on QPU design fabrication. Quanta will focus on the more the commodity-ish portion of the stack, which is the control system, the dilution refrigerator, the cables, the chassis, everything. And the reason for that is obviously quantum computing is considered to be a national sensitive critical technology. So we did not want to get all kinds of issues involved. We are very closely aligned with DOE and DoD labs here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our IP is actually shared with DOE labs in the U.S. So we did not want to get quantum technology involved with foreign entities that would have created challenges.
Right.
So we kept it very clean and straightforward. But they are going to invest $250 million on the non-QPU portion of the stack. We'll invest roughly comparable amount on the QPU. So plus in addition, and this is classic, the Asian company gesture, they are investing $35 million in Rigetti at, I believe, like for 3 million shares, so about $11.59 a share. So that we get cash at the end of this month, assuming regulatory clearance.
Okay.
So effectively, we feel that we beefed up our position quite a bit from a cash standpoint. So from 217, we effectively have plus the 35, plus 250. So effectively, we have gone from 217 to about $500
Wow.
million cash now. That puts us in a very nice position to compete directly with companies like IBM.
Absolutely,
So even
yeah.
though they have deeper pockets, bigger teams, we have excellent technology, we have great IP. So we feel very good about the position we are in right now with our approach and with a company like Quanta supporting us.
Yep, awesome. Congrats on that. So
Thank
let me
you.
Ask, other meaningful partners outside of Quanta that are important like that?
We certainly will continue to look at other partnership approaches because we are open modular. So right now, Quanta obviously for control system, Riverlane for error correction. But there are other parts of the stack too, as we go along, particularly when we start talking about encryption, decryption,
Right.
applications layer, but even the whole what you call dilution refrigeration technology. It's a complex technology. That's what's cooling the chip down. Right now, we are relying, there are three or four commercial companies where we are essentially buying dilution refrigerators, but it is our single biggest cost component right now when we are building a quantum computer is what we call the DR, dilution refrigeration technology. So we are looking forward to other partnership potential opportunities where we can integrate creative solutions from those kinds of companies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, more questions.
Yeah, go ahead, Jess.
With Quanta, when would they expect to have like a Vitex rack system relatively quickly? That would happen in 12 months, or 4 months? Like if they're going to spend all this money to create everything else, but let's say, for example, GPU, how long do you think they'll be ready? Like, oh, we'll have something that we can show you in 9 months itself, just a whole box or something.
So, I mean, it's a good question. So you're getting into the general timeline for when volumes will take up and when
commercialization.
And those are really good questions. And they understand we are very much in the R&D stage, so it's very hard to predict exactly when volumes take off. Longer term, I think there are many studies done, and we're talking 15, 20 years from now, when this quantum computing would be hundreds of billions of dollars of business. So everyone's convinced, and you can look at reports from companies like McKinsey or BCG. So all that stuff exists. Predicting the inflection points in the next few years is always very difficult when you're dealing with R&D kind of things. We understand that. I believe Quanta understands that as well. So the way I'll put it is, take a look at the actual numbers. That's better, easier to predict when we will be at 500 qubits or 1,000 qubits at 99.8, when we come to this quantum advantage, which is roughly the 4 to 5 year from now. That's where we believe the real inflection points start happening. So if you say, what is the volume pickup next year, I don't think that's a meaningful discussion at this point, given where we are in the trajectory of R&D. But certainly, 4 or 5 years from now, the volumes are expected to be a lot larger, and that's really what we are looking at. That's where Quanta is looking at. So they are very much looking at it as a long-term investment, just as we are.
So you think it's 3 to 5 years or so before it's real commercialization of quantum?
Yeah, I mean, our view is that you will start seeing quantum computers in data centers in 5 years or less. So I know there's a lot of opinions out there.
Yeah,
and frankly,
absolutely.
Quantum, there's a lot of overhyping done in some cases where some companies are saying it's going to be this year and next year. We think that's a little overhyped case situation. And then there's some other extreme cases, like famous one being Jensen Huang saying it won't happen for another 15 to 30 years.
Yeah.
And that we think is a little bit of a pessimistic, underhyped side. So we are somewhere in the middle in that 4 or 5 year timeline. Fairly consistent with what you heard from Google recently at their, in their earnings call. They also kind of said the same thing as what I'm saying right now, 4 to 5 years, very similar to what IBM is saying. And maybe that's because we are all using the superconducting gate approach.
Yeah, fair.
So our timelines are generally jiving with each other. But I think those are realistic timelines. Anyone who's saying it's now and next year may be a bit over-optimistic, and anyone saying it's 30 years is definitely very pessimistic.
Yep, yep, I agree. So, all right, so as I started doing research on kind of quantum, I mean, the first thing that popped up to me was national security, right? And this is the importance of the U.S. leading in this category. So can you just talk about, you know, where the U.S. is versus China?
The honest truth is none of us know.
Okay.
It's very tough to get information what's going on at the Chinese Academy of Sciences. At least about 3 years ago, they used to publish papers and file for patents. They have gone dark on us. We hardly see any papers or patents. Very surprisingly, we saw a paper just published last week, as a matter of fact, in PhysRevLet, which is a very good peer-reviewed journal. So that's our closest look at where they are. Now, PhysRevLet is a very good journal, and we want to trust the data and the people who reviewed the paper. At the same time, the data, when we look at it closely, comes very, very close to Google's data, almost to the decimal points.
Oh, really?
And that makes a lot of us, who did some cynicism and skepticism, even more skeptical about that data as to why is it so close to Google data.
Yeah.
The data should not be that close, you know, when you do different experiments and everything like that. Now, maybe it was coincidence, maybe not. But it's tough to get information from China. We do know they are investing a lot. We do know there are tons of people working on it. So our message to our government is that take this threat very, very seriously. I mean, right now it feels like the US with the superconducting camp, and we believe we are in that camp right now. We seem to have leadership technology, but they are working feverishly on that one.
Right.
So they may be ahead of us, and we just don't know.
Wasn't there an announcement out of something called Origin that came out of China recently?
There are multiple announcements. A lot of them come in their newspapers, like the South China Morning Post, and those are even harder to interpret. And we honestly don't know whether they have been done for some geopolitical reasons or for some technical reasons.
Yeah.
But at least the paper that came out in PhysRevLet was a real paper last week.
Okay. Any other questions from the audience? We had a couple minutes. Justin, go ahead.
Yeah, regarding the funding, right, as I mentioned, right now we are effectively between our cash plus Quanta, we have about $500 million. That takes us solidly into the next, that's definitely good enough for about 5 years or so. In the meantime, many governments, including the government in the US, there are many big projects that are being initiated. The biggest one being DARPA, which is DOD, has a man on the moon type project. So that's like a $315 million project. They are going to announce this month a group of companies, we hope we are one of them, that will be chosen to build this 500,000 qubit quantum computer in 7 years or so. So that's like the man on the moon type project. So the DoD's goal is to build the world's biggest, best quantum computer in 6-7 years. And their budget is about $300 million for that. That obviously we want to be the company which wins that project. If we do, then obviously our funding needs are taken care of. But it's not just that. There are other initiatives in DOE. There's this Quantum Initiative Act that is going on right now in our House and Senate. But the UK government has similar initiatives, and then you go around Western world. So even if you stay within the friendly allied countries, there are many initiatives at different government levels that are potential opportunities. So depending on how many of those become real and how many we can win, we may not need to raise more money. We'll certainly be opportunistic and continue to look at opportunities, but we feel pretty good about our financial position right now.
Awesome. One more question in the corner.
Yeah, so you answered the capital question, but what about the talent? Is there enough talent out there to actually deliver based on the fact that it's all in R&D right now?
A good question. I mean, it's always, because we are dealing with very quantum physics related topics. It's difficult. There are not too many universities who are graduating. Right now we have about 150 people, about 50 of them are PhDs from top-notch schools around the world, many of them from Berkeley and Stanford, which is where we are, and we managed to get them. And our retention rate is really high because we have a very good reputation as a company in this field right now. But it's always a challenge to attract. We continue to work with departments like Stanford and Berkeley, trying to encourage them to get more students. The good news is quantum physics and quantum computing is attracting young talent quite a bit. So a lot of younger people want to come into quantum computing. They clearly see this is the next big wave of technology. So a lot of undergrads are starting in quantum physics right now because of quantum computing. So we are optimistic that in the next 5 to 10 years, more schools around the country will graduate people with quantum physics background.
You're not losing talent to AI.
Luckily, in that sense, in an ironic way, because companies like Google, I'm sure you have seen, and Meta are going through some significant layoffs in the Bay Area right now, that's actually helping companies like us attract talent from those companies.
And with that, we should probably stop. But Subodh, thank you so much. I really appreciate
the
time to chat with you. Yep. So good luck with everything.